Good morning, everyone. I now call this remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and we will begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lippertz.
Present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Mecklund.
Present.
Representative Munson. Representative Munson. Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
Quorum is present. And first, members, we have minutes from some past meetings. Since this is an omnibus week, we figured we could do an omnibus minute motion. So we have minutes have been posted from February 25th, March 2nd, March 4th, March 9th, March 11th, March 16th, March 17th, and March 18th. Vice Chair Akam, would you care to move those minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes as listed.
Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes from those dates, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Our minutes are adopted. Well, welcome to Omnibus Week, everyone. Just to remind folks of the schedule for the week, today we are going to be doing the walkthrough of our omnibus bill. Tomorrow we are going to be taking public testimony. We have moved back the deadline for amendments to allow for more time for review of the bill and processing of amendments. And so that deadline is 3 p.m. tomorrow, I believe. Is that, correct me if I'm wrong. All right, I'm correct, 3 p.m. tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we will begin taking up amendments and that will carry over into Friday if needed. So that's our schedule for the week. And since I am authoring the bill, I will turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Akam.
Thank you, Representative Long. And we're here to move. Actually, why don't you go ahead and move your bill?
Terrific. Well, I will move House File 2110 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Your, I guess your bill is moved. And so Representative Long, would you like to tell us about your bill?
Absolutely. So the DE is posted for our bill and we'll be taking that up later in this week. Before I talk about the bill, I just want to thank our staff for their hard work on the bill. Mike Molzan, Mike Hermanson, Bob Eliff, Solveig Beckel, and Eric Anderson for all their hard work in supporting this bill. It takes a lot of effort to get to this point. The bill that we're hearing today is about ensuring that Minnesota is leading the transition to a clean energy economy. In one of our first hearings, David Mortensen, the president of Mortensen Construction, told us that nearly half of all wind turbines installed in the United States in the last decade were by Minnesota companies. And that wasn't an accident. That was because prior legislators made the right call in setting the direction of our state towards clean energy. We were an early adopter nationwide of a renewable energy standard, and this meant opportunities for Minnesota companies and workers. We have a lot to be proud of as a state. Over 80% of energy customers in Minnesota have a utility that is committed to rapid decarbonization. We have the best community solar program in the country, thanks to the leadership of Speaker Hortman. We have corporate leaders like 3M and Ecolab that have pledged to meet their needs with 100% clean energy. We have companies like Cleveland-Cliffs that has pledged greenhouse gas reductions of 25% by 2030. We have innovative community leaders like Bob Blake, who we heard from, creating jobs in clean energy at the Red Lake Nation. But it's not enough to coast on our past successes. We need to lead. We can't let Minnesota miss out on the opportunities that we know are coming. We know that clean energy means jobs. We don't have coal or gas in Minnesota, but we do have plenty of wind and sun. Xcel Energy's Ben Folk has described the energy transition as steel for fuel, and we have ample Minnesota taconite to make the 140 tons of steel in each wind turbine. We must also make sure these jobs are good jobs, and our bill includes provisions to support local hiring and good wages. I'm also proud of the work that Representative Listegard has done on Buy Clean and Buy Fair to reward companies that are making products protective of the environment and of workers, and of the work that Representative Christensen has done in this bill to ensure that we have a just transition for workers and communities. We know the energy transition must be equitable. There are an estimated 2,000 early deaths in the metro every year from air pollution, disproportionately the poor and people of color. We have to focus our efforts in the communities most impacted, and I appreciate Representative Fornstein's leadership on facilities releasing air pollution in our most vulnerable communities. We also must ensure we are creating opportunities for all with new jobs and industries, and I'm grateful to Rep. Lee's leadership on a North Minneapolis training center in our bill to do just that. We know clean energy is affordable. Wind is currently the cheapest form of electricity, period. Solar is cheaper than any new fossil fuel plants and is expected to be cheaper than wind within 5 years. Both have the added benefit of a guaranteed cost, so no susceptibility to fuel price swings. We also know that the cheapest energy is the energy you never use, and I'm grateful to Representative Bierman for leading the way on home weatherization to help fill this huge need. And we know opportunities will go beyond the electric sector. Our climate challenges, but also our economic opportunities, extend to buildings, transportation, and agriculture. And that's why I appreciate Representative Stevenson's leadership on electric vehicles and Representative Lippert's leadership in the agricultural sector and in developing innovative finance mechanisms. We know clean energy is necessary to confront climate change. This is not a someday problem. Climate change is impacting our health, our farms, our infrastructure, and our way of life right now. This bill contains important updates to our climate targets from Representative Akam's Next Generation Climate Act to align with best scientific knowledge. It also pushes our state to embrace new technologies needed to move rapidly on clean energy, such as Representative Holland's energy storage bill. In sum, this bill recognizes the challenges we have: an energy economy in transition, the threat of climate change, disproportionate impacts for environmental justice communities. But it also embraces our opportunities: good paying jobs, affordable energy, and new industries. It says it's time for Minnesota to once again lead our nation's clean energy transition. So I appreciate the work of everyone on the committee in getting the bill to the point where it is today. I look forward to the discussion this week. And Chair Akam, I do have three individuals who I've asked to join us today to speak to the bill before we turn over for a walkthrough.
Thank you, Representative Long. Would you like to go ahead and introduce your first speaker?
Yes, first we're joined by Marco Hernandez with COPAL.
Mr. Hernandez, would you introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony, please?
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Patty Akam, and members of the committee. My name is Marco Hernandez, and I'm the Public Policy Director at COPAL. I'm also a member of the Governor's Advisory Council on Climate Change, but will speak on behalf of COPAL today. I'm here to speak in favor of the omnibus bill and why combating climate change and transitioning to carbon-free or electrified technology is important towards environmental justice and health. Growing up in Richmond, California, I went to an elementary school near the Chevron refinery, and every day there would be smoke plumes over our school. Then going home, there was the occasional rotten egg smell since my house was very close to major PG&E natural gas pipelines. I witnessed the negative health consequences in my family and in my community. And in my 6 years living in Minnesota, I have seen similar narratives play out in communities in the north side with the trash incinerator and an indigenous sacred land with Line 3. Transitioning to carbon-free technology would be a huge step forward to changing this horrendous narrative for BIPOC and working / lower class communities in the state. Municipal solid waste incinerators like the HERC in Minneapolis North Side, where it is really diverse, are large emitters of toxic air pollutants that are detrimental to human health. Heavy metals, dioxins, lead, mercury, nitrogen oxide, and particulate matter. incinerators release 2.5 times as much carbon dioxide to make the same amount of electricity as a coal power plant. Notably, long-term exposure to particulate matter has been shown to increase the risk of death from COVID-19. Transitioning to carbon-free technology would make incinerators obsolete and would improve the health of those living around them, usually communities of color and many living below the federal poverty line. When it comes to Line 3 in northern Minnesota, the pipeline would cross Leech Lake and the Fond du Lac reservations and break multiple treaties. It would cross lakes and impact 389 acres of wild rice beds that are sacred to the Anishinaabe. In addition, there is research on the man camps and how it brought the increase of drug trafficking, sex trafficking, and violent crimes that disproportionately affect Indigenous women in particular. The tar from the pipelines then go to refineries that are usually situated in communities of color. Transitioning to carbon-free or electrified technology would be a step towards the mental, physical, and spiritual healing of Indigenous communities in Minnesota. Now is really the time that we need to get into the thinking that we need to get out of this horrendous narrative and to move towards carbon-free and electrified technologies so that we don't continue this narrative. And I would like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify and for putting this omnibus bill together.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Representative Long, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
Yes, we'll next hear from Lucia Everest, who's at Edina High School.
Ms. Everest, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm Lucia Everest, and I'm a ninth grader at Edina High School. And I'm testifying on the behalf of the youth of Minnesota for this in favor of this omnibus bill. I work with MN Youth for Climate Justice, and I work for YEAH, which is Youth Environmental Activists. And I'm just here to kind of talk about the importance of you guys fighting for our generation. And while it seems like a lot of this stuff is working towards something that's far away, while it might be far away for some, it's really close for us and it's really near and dear to my heart. And there's hundreds and upon hundreds of Minnesota youth that are advocating for clean energy. And the amount of issues that are there are numerous. And it is so beyond important for you guys to fight for us because we can't fight for ourselves. The amount of meetings that I've gone to, the amount of representatives that I've talked to, I can't go in, I can't sign things. I'm still 15. And so I'm just here to emphasize the point that we really, really need you to be in support of this bill. And no matter where you stand politically, it doesn't matter because we all live on the same earth. We all are in the same environment. Everyone has kids. Everyone wants to see their grandchildren grow up. And everyone wants to have their kids be able to worry about normal things like who's going to win the March Madness tournament when a lot of Minnesota youth right now are worrying about, will I have a future and will I be able to continue my family line because of where our environment stands? And so I'm just pleading for you guys to please be in support of this bill on behalf of Minnesota youth. And thank you so much for your time and for listening to me.
I was muted. Thank you, Ms. Everest. You're pretty impressive for 15 years old. Thank you so much for being with us today. Representative Long, would you like to introduce your last testifier?
Yes, our last testifier will be Joel Carlson, who's a laborer with the Laborers International Union.
Good morning,
Mr.
Chair Long.
Mr. Carlson, sorry. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Long, Vice Chair Akam, and committee members. My name is Joel Carlson, and I live in St. Paul. I'm a steel construction laborer and proud member of LIUNA Local 563. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 2110. I grew up in Chicago, Minnesota, where my parents still live. Late Senator Charlie Berg came from. I worked in all kinds of settings, general construction, demolition, bridge maintenance, and refinery and power plant maintenance. Construction is tough work. It's not just physically demanding, but it's also stressful to deal with the ups and downs of the market. You have times when every contractor is hiring, but other times it's hard to get enough hours to put food on the table and maintain my health benefits. I figured out if I want to keep working, I would have to keep expanding my skills and stay on top of the latest technologies. Fortunately, the union and our contractors offer dozens of training classes that members can take at no cost. So when I'm not working, I'm usually at the training center. I think the same lesson applies to what Minnesota needs to do when it comes to energy. We all know that energy industry is changing, not just here, but all around the world. It's changing because we're trying to slow climate change. And I truly believe that we have an obligation to protect our environment for future generations. I have 31 made Minnesota solar panels on my roof, thanks to the legislation. So legislation works. But it's also changing because we have new technologies that are cheaper and pollute less. If we want to succeed as a state, we need to stay on top of these changes. We need to be building for the future so Minnesotans aren't left behind in the global economy. I want young apprentices who are just starting their careers as laborers to get the chance to work on the energy systems of the future and earn a decent wage while they do it. I believe that House File 2110 will help get us there. First, House File 2110 puts our state on a sensible path to affordable, reliable, zero carbon energy using technologies like wind, solar, and nuclear power. Second, House File 2110 includes a prevailing wage and local job protection so that we can be certain that Minnesota workers and communities benefit from energy investments and local energy resources. Finally, House File 2110 supports natural gas innovations that will help us heat our homes and buildings while preserving jobs for the laborers, plumbers, and other workers that maintain our gas utilities. I said I grew up in Chicago, Minnesota, and have for the past 10 years been looking forward to having a wind energy project get off the ground in their area. I'd like to see that wind farm become a reality so my folks can get some extra income for their retirement and also benefit the community. And I'd really like to see that project create opportunities for young men and women who grew up and where I start their construction careers. If the legislator passes this bill, I'm confident we can make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And Representative Long, any other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair, ready for the bill walker.
Okay, so let's turn it over to Mr. Eloff with House Research. Can walk us through the bill. Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given the length of this bill, members, I think I'd like to focus my remarks on provisions that have changed significantly since they went through this committee and also new provisions that members have not seen. The bill itself is organized into six articles. The first article deals with energy conservation and storage issues. And on page one, section one is House File 70, Representative Freiberg's bill, establishing a revolving loan account for state buildings to do energy conservation. And actually, there were some changes made to this bill when it went to state government finance, and those changes can be found at the very bottom of page two and the top of page three. And what those changes did was give additional information on the loans that would be made from the loan account. They have to be at or below the market rate of interest, including zero interest loans, have a term no longer than 7 years at the top of page three. Section three on page three is the first section of Representative Stevenson's House File 164, which begins in earnest on page four. This is the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, which essentially rewrites the Conservation Investment Improvement Program that Minnesota has had for almost 40 years now. It separates provisions that relate to investor-owned utilities and what are called consumer-owned utilities, meaning munis and co-ops. It increases energy savings goals for IOUs and establishes procedures regarding fuel switching. And there have been no changes to language in this bill, which extends from Section 4 to Section 20, which goes to page 34, which is the next bill I'll talk about, is Section 21 at the bottom of page 34. This is from Representative Akin's House File 1256, Minnesota Efficient Technology Accelerator, which allows for a nonprofit organization to work with energy efficient technology firms. There have been language changes, but nothing substantive has been changed in this bill since it passed through the committee. Section 22 on page 36 is a new provision. The stricken language at the very bottom of page 36 and the top of page 37 deletes a requirement for the PUC to file a report. That language is sponsored by Representative Long. At the top of page 37, sections 23 and 24 are from Representative Holland's bill on energy storage systems. And section 23 requires the commission to require a public utility to install one or more energy systems based on the report that the utility makes in its integrated resource plan. And section 24 describes what needs to be in that application that the utility makes to the commission. Section 25 changes some energy policy goals in clause 4, reducing building usage by 50% through 25. This is also from Representative Long. Section 26 at the bottom of page 39 is from Representative Lee's House File 2386, which seeks to rebuild properties that were damaged during the civil unrest in Minnesota last year and to provide grants to make sure that those rebuildings are energy efficient and utilize renewable resources. And that bill extends to page 45. And in the middle of page 45 in section 27 is Representative Long's House File 831. Which requires the Department of Labor and Industry to adopt new commercial energy codes as they come out. There's been no change in this language. At the bottom of page 46 in section 28 is another portion of Representative Lee's House File 2386 that allows the state to implement pre-weatherization measures at low-income households. And on section 29 is Representative Bierman's House File 2363, which organizes a task force seeking to expand the provision of weatherization services and find additional funding for that program. And page 49 shows the appropriations for some of the provisions that we talked about in that article. Article 2, energy, at the top of page 50 is the repealer for that section. And what is repealed are some subdivisions in the current conservation improvement program language. Subdivision one, because Representative Stevenson's bill includes a new section with new definitions, subdivision one is the old definitions. Subdivision 2C and 4 are some obsolete language. And subdivision 10 refers to waste heat, which was brought in to the definition sections under Representative Stevenson's bill. Turning now to Article 2, which begins on page 50, Energy Transition, is House File 1750, Representative Christensen's bill, establishing a state energy transition office to assist workers and communities to deal with the dislocations of fossil fuel generating plants shutting down. It's in addition to setting up that office, it also sets up an advisory committee that is required to put together an energy transition plan. That bill extends to page 55. And in section 4 on page 55 is Representative Lippert's House File 2044, establishing the Minnesota Innovation Finance Authority, a nonprofit corporation that is to leverage financial, to leverage financing for energy and climate adaptation projects. And there have been no changes in this language since the committee saw it, except that we filled in some blanks in terms of the number of people on the advisory committee for the authority. The next bill is starts on the bottom of page 60 in section 5. This is from Representative Stevenson's House File 10, the Clean Energy First bill. This changes the Public Utilities Commission's process to evaluate new energy generating resources. And sections 5 to 8 here are from that bill. At the bottom of page 62, starting with section 9, is Representative Long's House File 278, which establishes a carbon-free energy standard by 2040 and also makes some changes to the renewable energy standards that we currently have. And this bill extends from sections 9 to sections 22 on page 73, where again, we go back to Representative Stevenson's House File 10 bill. There's some intermixing here. On page 76, section 25, yes, is Representative Christensen's House File 2054, which requires utilities to, in their integrated resource plan, file a narrative that describes how they are helping to deal with dislocations that will develop in communities when fossil fuel plants are retired. At the bottom of page 76 in section 26, this is a section that is in Representative Long's Clean Energy First Plan, but there's been a number of changes since the commission saw it, or since our committee saw it, excuse me. In paragraph A at the bottom of page 76, it requires the Public Utilities Commission to adopt and apply interim costs of greenhouse gas emissions that have been established by the federal government very recently, February 21, 2021, as the language shows. Paragraph B at the top of page 77 requires that in doing environmental cost analysis that the utilities account for the full life cycle of fuels. And actually, paragraph C is language from Representative Stevenson's House File 10, which continues through sections 27 to 31, which takes us to page 81 at the bottom, where we come to section 32. And this is Representative Stevenson's House File 239, the Natural Gas Innovation Act. Again, no changes have been made in this language since it passed through the committee. And this bill extends all the way to page 94. And in the middle of page 94 is section 34, which is Representative Akin's House File 751, dealing with beneficial building electrification, as does section 35 at the bottom of page 94, which allows public utilities to submit a plan to the commission to promote energy uses powered by electricity. Section 36 at the bottom of page 95 is Representative Long's House File 1189, the securitization bill, which allows utilities to sell bonds in advance of retiring generating plants as a way of saving consumer dollars for that process. And that bill also hasn't been changed. It extends to include sections 36 all the way to section 45 on page 112. And section 46 on 112 is again from Representative Stevenson's House File 10. This section and the following section deal with labor issues regarding decisions of the commission to construct large electric power plants and wind power plants specifically. And beginning on page 115 are the appropriation sections for this section, which refer to those provisions I've discussed earlier. Although subdivision one on page 115 is language, I believe it was developed by Representative Hornstein, which calls for a $100,000 study look at greenhouse gas implications of eligible construction materials. Okay. And the repealer for Article 2 is towards the bottom of page 117, and it actually repeals a subdivision in the renewable energy standard language that is obsolete language. It refers to the time when there were energy objectives rather than mandatory standards. Article 3, climate change, starts at the bottom of page 117, and the section 1 there is Representative Lislegard's bill, which the chair referenced in his introduction. There have been no changes made to that bill. And that extends to page 121, where section 2 is Representative Akam's House File 1428, which modifies the state's greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. Turning to section 3 on page 122, this is Representative Lippert's House File 2044, which sets standards for the carbon intensity of transportation fuels and extends to page 126. This is something that this is kind of morphed from Representative Akam's House File 1428. And what it does is have the governor's climate change sub-cabinet do a study to come up with what's called a climate transition plan for incorporating the greenhouse gas emission reduction targets into all aspects of state agency activities, planning, funding, awarding grants, and most importantly, permitting, I think. Section 5 at the bottom of page 126 is also a bill of Representative Akam's House File 2420 that would have the University of Minnesota put together a climate model for use in the state. And beginning on page 127 are the appropriations for that article. Article 4 regarding electric vehicles starts on page 128. And the first 7 sections are from Representative Stevenson's House File 1668. This includes a state preference for purchasing electric vehicles, electric vehicle rebates to individuals, allows public utilities to submit a transportation electrification plan to the Public Utility Commission, et cetera. And this bill, these sections go to page 134. Oops, no, sorry. 138. Yes. At the bottom of which we have section 8, which is Representative Bierman's House File 1853, which provides funds for electric vehicle charging stations to be installed in state and regional parks. And the section which follows, section 9 on page 139, is Representative Bowe's House File 2234, which also funds electric vehicle charging stations at county government centers. One change that's been made in both of these bills is that the locations of the funded charging stations are restricted to the XL service territory, electric service territory. At the bottom of page 140, section 10 is Representative Lee's House File 1899, which provides funds for the Metro Council to purchase electric buses. And the appropriations section, section 11, begins on page 141 for a number of those provisions. Article 5, solar energy, begins on page 143. Section 1 is the community solar garden provision in state statutes, and there we have 4 separate bills which made changes in this provision. So I'll go back and forth between them. If you look towards the bottom of the page on line 143.27, this is from a bill of Representative Long, so we heard as an XXX bill, increasing the capacity of solar gardens from 1 to 3 megawatts. Turning to page 144, at the very top is Representative Akam's change in House File 653 on the contiguous counties, allowing projects with a minimum setback of 100 feet to be excluded exempted from the contiguous county requirement. The other change in paragraph D there at the top of 144 is again from Representative Long's XXX bill, as are the changes at the bottom of the page that extend to page 145 that are mostly consumer protection provisions. Lines 145.7 and 8 are from Representative Richardson's House File 1592, requiring diversity reporting, in this case, with respect to solar gardens. The other changes in this section that start in the middle of page 145 are from Representative Long's House File 1397, which takes us to page 147, where we have two sections from Representative Akam's House File 1427, the Solar for Schools program. The first section really hasn't changed since the commission has seen it, but the second one, which Solar for Schools program in XL Retail Electric Service Territory, has, the way I'd characterize it to say it's been simplified quite a bit. It basically just asks XL to prepare a plan that they must submit to the Public Utilities Commission for approval on how this program will work. And that extends to the top of page 153. Section 4 on that page is a change in the definition of solar energy generating system from Representative Stevenson. And section 5 was Representative Hollins's House File 1651. And there's been no change in that language as well. At the bottom of page 153 is Representative Lippert's House File 2052. That language has remained the same. There is new language on page 154, section 7, in the middle of that page, that Representative Long sponsored, which requires the Department of Administration essentially, once its current master solar contract program terminates, to reopen requests for proposals to allow additional applicants to enter into that program. And section 8 on 154 begins the appropriations for section 5. And there are some new things there as well, members. On page 156, subdivision 7 towards the top of the page is Representative Liz Lagarde's House File 1978, which would provide funds for the expansion of a solar manufacturing plant in Mountain Iron. And subdivision 8 is language that is sponsored by Representative Lippert to deal with restrictions in and around the city of Northfield at the regarding the addition of additional solar capacity at those places to transfer funds to Excel to allow for the capacity to increase without undue financial burdens on solar generators. Article 6 is the last article in the bill. It's made up of a number of miscellaneous provisions. Section 1 is also from Representative Lippert's House File 1879, which we'll run into a little bit later. This section just allows the Pollution Control Agency to implement reuse strategies on closed landfills. Representative Lippert's bill, 1879, actually allows for solar projects on closed landfills, and we'll get to language regarding that later. Section 2 is also part of that. On page 158, section 3 is language again from Representative Richardson's House File 1592, requiring diversity reporting with respect to renewable development account grant cycle projects. And that bill extends all the way to 162, where at the bottom we have House File 912, which is Representative Akin's bill for the next four sections, that extends the cold weather period beginning 2 weeks earlier and ending 2 weeks later. The only change in this bill is on page 164. Section 5 was added to ensure that the notice that utilities must give consumers regarding the coming of the cold weather rule also has to be changed in line with the change times of the rule itself. On page 166, section 9 is Representative Akin's House File 1226, which makes changes in the net metering avoided cost language. That has not changed. Section 10 is House File 1225, sponsored by Representative Hansen, that represents an agreement between XL Energy and District Heating in St. Paul to extend the contract between those two organizations, and also to electrify the district heating process. Section 12 on page 170 is new language from Representative Stevenson regarding exemptions for certificate of need projects. And the changes are on the top of page 171. Essentially what this exempts from certificate of need are projects, wind and solar projects that the PUC has ordered utility to procure in an integrated resource plan. Those would not have to go through certificate of need process. At the very bottom of page 171 is Representative Stevenson's, or a portion of Representative Stevenson's bill, House File 1031. And what it does is on page 172, it deletes the sunset for this assessment authority of the Department of Commerce to do regional and national duties. Article 14 on page 172 has also been changed since it left the committee. This is the bill that changes the system at the Public Utilities Commission for compensation for participants in PUC decisions. And most of the changes made were in regard to compensation. If you look at page 173, line 22, it says compensation may not exceed $50,000 for a single participant in any proceeding. That's down from $75,000 in the original language. And also at the bottom of that page, paragraph B, a single participant may not be granted more than $200,000 in a single calendar year. That is new language. And at the top of page 174 is language that limits the aggregate amount a utility can spend for intervener compensation. These have been changed significantly too. You'll see in clause one, for utilities with up to $300 million in gross operating revenues, it's now $100,000 maximum that can be paid under intervener compensation. It had been $150 for utilities between $300 and $900 million in gross operating revenues. The numbers came down from $500,000 to $275,000. And utilities with $900 million, but less than $2 billion gross revenues, the numbers came down again from $1 million to $375. And finally, for the largest utilities, $1,250,000 is the new maximum. It had been $2.5 million. So those are the changes in that language for that provision. And the next bill is on section 15 on page 176. This is the rest of Representative Richardson's House File 1592 bill, which applies to utility diversity reporting. On page 177 is additional new language from Representative Stevenson in section 16. The change being on line 177.24. A little bit of background, what this does is allow in the siting and routing process, an alternative process, which is currently in the statutes, but the question is, who does it apply to? This change would change the application for high voltage transmission lines that are greater than 200 kilovolts up to 30 miles. Right now it's up to 5 miles. And the change means that first, they don't have the company seeking a permit wouldn't have to provide a second site or route as they would under the regular process. And they would also be allowed to do what's called an environmental assessment rather than an EIS, which is less burdensome to them. Turning to page 178, section 17 is also new language that's sponsored by Representative Long. And again, the changes are to delete a report that the Public Utilities Commission has to do regarding variances from wind projects. Section 18 is Representative Holland's bill on Tribal Advocacy Council. And at the bottom of page 179 is, again, Representative Lippert's House File 1879, which talks about the solar project that's put on the closed landfill. And then beginning on page 180, we have the appropriation section for Article 6. Subdivision 1 is the microgrid research application of St. Thomas University. It was sponsored by Representative Herr. Subdivision 2 is the clean energy training project that the chair referred to in his introductory remarks, which is from Representative Lee's House File 1270. Subdivision 3 on page 182 is also Representative Lippert's bill regarding the solar on landfill. It describes how the Minnesota Management Budget will prepay whatever the remaining bonds to free up that land to be used for those purposes. In Representative Lippert's original bill, I believe the appropriation was $3 million, but in speaking with MMB, they discovered that the amount that applied to this particular project was only about $100,000, and that's reflected on line 7. Subdivisions 4 and 5 at the bottom of the page, and the next three subdivisions are general appropriations to the Commerce Department. Subdivision 9, towards the bottom of page 183, is general operations money for the Petroleum Tank Release Compensation Board. And subdivision 10 is operations money for the Public Utilities Commission. The repealers at the bottom of page 183, section 115C.13 repeals a sunset of the Petro Fund program so that can continue. And the second section there, 216B.16, subdivision 10, is the repeal of the current language dealing with intervener compensation, which we've got new language for that, and it's put in a different section of the law. And finally, paragraph B at the bottom of page 183 is repealing a provision that referred to the Becker gas plant that was passed in 2017. Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Eloff. I can only imagine the number of hours involved in putting this document together. So thank you from all of us for your expertise and hard work. And next we have Ms. Beckel with House Fiscal to go through the fiscal sheet, please.
Chair and members, I am just going to share my spreadsheet screen with you, so hold on one moment here. Can everyone see the numbers with relative ease?
Yes.
Okay. So this spreadsheet only shows the House position. So if you would like to look at the governor's position as well as funding from past years, you can look at the other spreadsheet included on the committee page. So looking at this spreadsheet, the first page is a summary. I show general fund appropriations and spending at the top. Then I show assessment authority. So this effectively means that the Energy Resources Division of Commerce, as well as the PUC, are allowed to assess for some of their operating costs. And so these numbers you see here, the negative numbers, are showing revenue back to the state from those assessments. Then on line 19, I show the total general fund impact from this bill. And you can see here the change from the February forecast base funding for fiscal years 22-23 and here for fiscal years 24 and 25. On this page, I also show the renewable development fund balance after the provisions in this bill. So you can see the change here and here. And then I also show the Petro Fund balance. It is at zero it is only at 450 this year because the language in the bill reinstates the Petro Fund, or rather cancels the sunset. Moving on to the detail portion, Here I have appropriations to the Department of Commerce. Also interspersed throughout are appropriations for energy purposes to different agencies. So assume that it's Commerce unless otherwise specified. Apologies. So on lines 38 through 40, we have base appropriations, but you can see that there are some increases to those base appropriations. And this litigation expense, you can see the numbers on the other spreadsheet that has the full data because that is from fiscal years 20 and 21 only. So starting with the House proposal there, and you can look at this in the bill if you'd like using the article and sections I've provided here. We start with the building standard net zero 2036. This is an appropriation to the Department of Labor and Industry for $146,000 in fiscal year 23. Moving down to Article 2, Section 49, we have the Buy Clean, Buy Fair study that I believe was the Hornstein Amendment on Chair Long's bill. And so that is $100,000 in fiscal year 22. Then we have the Natural Gas Innovation Act, which some of you may have noticed is able to be assessed back to the state, but the appropriations are $189,000 per year. And then the beneficial electrification costs to the Department of Commerce. Moving down to Article 4, Section 11, we have the electric vehicle rebates. In the general fund bucket, it is $2.5 million in fiscal year 2022, and then the auto dealer certification for electric vehicles is at $500,000 from the general fund. Then we have the electric school bus program, and it is appropriated general fund funds for the Department of Commerce is operating for of the program. Moving down to Article 5, Section 8, I have the solar on schools general fund appropriation at $1.564 million. And then I have the participant compensation appropriation to the Department of Commerce for operating again for that program. Moving down, I've separated out the general fund and the renewable development account spending. So now we're on to the renewable development account spending. Here we show some base funding. You can see there's no change from the base. And then there are some items that again, you can see the funding for in fiscal years 20 or 21. In the full spreadsheet. Oops, apologies. So moving down, let's go back up to Article 1, Section 31. The Rebuild Right grants come in at $3 million in fiscal year 2022. Article 2, Section 49, Community Planning Energy Transition Office is $450,000 each year from the RDA. The Innovative Finance Authority comes in at $10 million in fiscal year 2022. Moving down to Article 3, Section 6, we have the Clean Fuels Report. That is $100,000 in fiscal year 22. The Small Model Climate Study at $583,000 in fiscal year 2022. And then the Next Generation Climate Act, which you can see is broken out into a few different items, to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Administration. Moving down to Article 4, Section 11, we're back to our electric vehicle rebates. So that is from the RDA. These rebates are at $9 million in fiscal year 2022 and $8 million in fiscal year 2023. Then the auto dealer certification, again, this time from the RDA, is for $2 million in fiscal year 2022. The electric school bus program from the RDA is at $2 million in fiscal year 2022. And then the electric vehicle charging in state parks is at $2 million in fiscal year 2022. And then it has ongoing funding for operating costs. Then we have electric vehicle charging on county government centers at $2 million in fiscal year 2022. And the electric vehicle metro transit buses at $5 million in fiscal year 2022. Article 5, Section 8 concerns mostly solar. So we see the solar on schools appropriation that is at $5 million each year of the current biennium. Solar in state parks, $2 million in the first year. Solar on state-owned buildings, $4 million in the first year. Solar siting on prime farmland, these are some operating costs that are ongoing. The Mountain Iron Solar expansion at $5.5 million. This is in fiscal year 21. I just didn't want to create an entirely new column, so apologies for that, but it's fiscal year 21. And then the Northfield Energy Upgrades and Task Force comes in at $550,000 the first year of the biennium. Article 6, Section 20 has the St. Thomas microgrid, which has spending in 5 years. So $2.4 million is appropriated in the first year, $1.2 million in the second. The tails have $1 million in the first year of the tails and $400,000 in the second year of the tails. And 2026 also has $400,000 in for a base. Next, the North Minneapolis Clean Energy Training Center has $2.5 million in the first year. And finally, the Anoka-Ramsey Landfill project has $100,000 in fiscal year 2022. This brings us down to the transfer. This is a transfer to the Department of Administration for state building, energy conservation, and revolving loan fund. And that's at $5 million each year of the current biennium. Then we come down to non-general fund spending or non-RDA fund spending. So here is the utility grid reliability assessment extension. So this is the authority to spend it. And here is the authority to assess that. So we have revenue coming in and revenue going out. Then the Minnesota Efficient Technology Accelerator, that also has revenues of $3.4 million each year in the first biennium and $6.02 million revenue each year in the second biennium. And those costs are again spent as well. So it nets to zero. Then last item before we move to the Petro Board is the Weatherization Task Force. This is not a direct appropriation, but just an expenditure from the federal fund that has money for the Weatherization Task Force. Then the Petroleum Tanker Lease Compensation Board receives its operating of $1.056 million each year. And we are down to the Public Utilities Commission. So the Public Utilities Commission is receiving an operating increase under this bill, and it is also receiving operating costs for the Natural Gas Innovation Act, beneficial electrification, the electric school bus program, participant compensation, and solar siting on prime farmland. So these are just operating for those programs. Apologies. So the next line, I just have the Petroleum Tanker Lease Compensation Fund separated out to show a bit of where that is at. You can see that there is a significant change from years past. This simply just reflects getting rid of the sunset for the Petro Fund. So the revenues are still coming in instead of being canceled as they were before. From the Petro Fund, as we like to call it, there are some direct appropriations, which I mentioned earlier on this page. There they are. And then there are also statutory and open appropriations to Commerce and direct appropriations to Deed, as well as a transfer out to the PCA. And so those are where the Petro Fund monies are spent. And finally, we have a brief overview of the Renewable Development Fund. You can, of course, find a more detailed version of this in the February forecast consolidated fund statement. But here I show the statutory and open appropriations that happen along with the direct appropriations out of the RDA from this bill, and then the currently required payments out of other agencies. So here's that 1 million in the community energy transition grants. That change from last year, DEED was not able to spend the entire 2 million from fiscal year 19 or 20 in 21. And so they will be spending some of that in fiscal year 2022. And finally, this is my estimated balance for the RDA after all of the House provisions. And that is the spreadsheet. And I am ready to stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. I, again, appreciate your dedication and really your attention to detail. So thank you for that and for your support to the committee. So with that, I'll turn it back to Representative Long to see if he has any final statements before we go to questions.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to take questions.
Okay. So as I look, I see Representative Sosinski. You have your hand up.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. And just would be to the fiscal staff. What is the total revenue raisers through fees and other things that are in this bill? And you mentioned those two portions. I don't have the spreadsheet right in front of me, but had the highlight within parentheses gov for 3.4. Where do those funds come from? And then where are the, do we have any bullet points or line items for the federal ARP money? And will that be included in this budget?
Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Swidzinski. So I'm going to try to answer all of your questions. I apologize if I missed some.
I apologize for asking questions the way I do. I'll try to cut them up a little bit. I'm used to not being allowed to ask multiple questions, so I try to get them all in one. So,
I can share my spreadsheet again if you'd like. I think I can answer this without sharing.
Yeah. That'd be great. Thank you.
You'd like it to be shared?
Yes, if you want to bring it back up, that'd be great.
Okay. Okay, so I've brought us back to the first page of the spreadsheet. I like to include the savings in the general fund area on the front page, partially because it makes my boss Bill's job easier, but also just to show sort of the general impact of the bill. And so you can see here that there are savings or revenue, assessment revenue of $549,000 in fiscal year 22, $521,000 in 23, for a total of $1.07 million in the first biennium, and then it's about $834,000 in the second biennium. And this just means the Department of Commerce and the PUC assessing the costs that they've incurred from these different provisions. Let me go down to non-general fund. So here again is the utility grid reliability assessment extension. So this is not general fund spending, but it is also money that can be assessed back. And so that's $1 million in each biennium. And then the Minnesota Efficient Technology Accelerator, or META, those are also special revenue funds that can be assessed back. So here's the revenue and here is the spending. So that comes in at about $6.9 million per biennium and $12.04 per biennium. So those are the assessment amounts. I believe I've captured all of them.
Yes. Madam Chair?
Representative Swidzinski.
I'm going to give a follow-up. Who will be getting assessed?
Ms. Beckel?
Chair, Representative Swidzinski. So these are the assessments on the utilities that are regulated by the PUC and that the Department of Commerce Energy Resources Division works with. So the energy utilities in Minnesota.
All right, thank you.
Representative Swazinski, any follow-up?
No, that's it. I think I've got a couple other things. Are you still going, Ms. Beckel, a little bit as far as the previous questions that I had, or you feel like you're done?
I know you had another question, Representative, but I cannot remember it.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, go ahead, Representative Swazinski.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And just kind of a general follow-up to my previous question. I talked a little bit about the ARP money or the RDA money. Rather than, you know, have additional assessments, maybe this would be a question to the author of the bill or to the Department of Commerce. Why not just use the ARP money coming from the federal government, or why not use RDA money rather than increase electrical costs to consumers?
Representative Long?
Thank you for the question, Representative Swazinski. So our current budget that we've agreed to as the House does not allow for appropriations from the rescue plan. There's a $0 target for that. So we're not able to appropriate from the rescue plan at the moment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Swazinski.
Why would you do that?
Representative Long.
Well, Representative Swazinski, I did not author the House budget agreement, but I know that there are conversations going on at the leadership level about spending rescue plan dollars, and that those I'm sure will be a part of the end of session negotiations.
Do you agree with that, Mr. Chair, or do you disagree that the legislature should be left out of those conversations?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski. No, I think the legislature should be a part of those conversations. I think that the goal from leadership was to try to make sure that there were unified conversations happening about the rescue plan spending. And I know those conversations will be a part of it. I don't believe the legislature will be left out of those discussions. And I'm very hopeful that for one, the bill that we took up recently regarding ratepayer relief and help for municipal utilities can be a part of that funding discussion. And I've spoken with leadership in the governor's office about that.
Thank you, Representative Long. Why don't we move on to Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this question is for the author of the bill, Long, or Ms. Beckel. Is there any provision in the fiscal note or in general on what impact this bill will have on energy prices across the state of Minnesota? It has a lot of moving parts, to say the least, a lot of mandates and requirements. Just wondering if anybody has done an estimate on how much our electricity rates are going to go up on a per kilowatt hour basis on average. I've got a couple other questions too.
Representative Long, could you want to try?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. I do not believe that our electricity rates will go up under this bill. As I mentioned, clean energy is the cheapest form of energy in the state right now. And I'll also note that we have some excellent legislation in here from Representative Stevenson on energy efficiency, the ECO bill, which we know that the cheapest energy is one you don't use. And so trying to improve our energy efficiency does reduce costs overall. And we've seen that with our really successful energy efficiency efforts as a state. So I think that the bill, when taken as a whole, will save money for Minnesota consumers.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, do you have any data, verifiable data, that rates will not go up? You said you don't believe, but, you know, that doesn't hold a lot of water with me. I'd like to see actual data that the rates won't go up from this bill. Is there any data that shows that?
Representative Long.
Yes, there is. So for energy efficiency, if you are not using energy, then that, I think, speaks for itself about the savings. And in terms of clean energy, I would point you to estimates that have been done by organizations like Lazard Investment Firm, which looks at the levelized cost of energy for different forms of energy and has found that wind energy is the cheapest energy right now in the United States, and that solar energy is cheaper than new fossil plants. And we've heard projections that solar energy is going to be cheaper than wind in the coming years. And there are good estimates on that from the National Renewable Energy Lab and others. And I'd certainly be happy to share those with you, Representative Grunhagen, if you're interested.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I appreciate your response, Chair Long, but the that doesn't hold a lot of water for me, to tell you the truth. I agree, if you don't use the energy, there's no cost, okay? But I'm talking about people on fixed incomes out here who've seen nothing but higher per kilowatt hour charges the more alternative energy that we use. And you say, well, there's a number of factors. Well, that's one of the factors that seems to be driving up their rates. I've experienced myself in my own residence. But is there a report? The next question is there any reports that are required of all the provisions we're passing back to the legislature so we know what we actually got for the money that we're spending? I mean, any of these agencies or organizations have to report back to us that, okay, we received $3.6 million. Here's what we actually accomplished so that we as the legislature can evaluate, you know, what's actually in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I think there are several provisions that do have reports back, but I'll let the author answer the question. Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Aikum, and for the good question, Representative Grunhagen. I agree that that's an important component of making sure that we have good oversight from the legislature. And as Chair Aikum noted, there are several reports that are required under the current bill. But if there are other provisions where you feel like a report would be useful, I'm more than open to entertain those suggestions.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that response, Chair Long. Say, just one quick question on the bill that I was going over. On line 112.11, it says that the people receiving, the organization receiving this money can use up to 10% for administrative costs. That seems a little high for administrative costs when we require a lower percentage, if memory serves me, on other agencies in the state. Any response on that?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Long, do you have a response, or should we ask?
But yeah, I do. Thank you, Chair Aikum and Representative Grunhagen. So I'm not familiar with every program in the state, but I do know that for the federal grants that the state oversees, 10% is the number that we use for commerce federal grants on energy. So that is standard, at least as far as that comparison is concerned.
Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, I appreciate that, and that was my final question, and I'm just hoping most of this bill doesn't make it personally. I hope that doesn't
offend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to the bill author, Representative Long, I am wondering if I must be missing it. So I've gone over the bill a few times, and I cannot find any language that addresses the human rights issues associated in green energy. So using forced labor in places in China, using forced labor, child labor in places like Congo, where children are in mines digging for cobalt. Am I missing it, or is it just not included in there? There was a lot of discussion with the minority on these human rights issues, using this type of labor in order to enrich our country, as we are discussing here in this country, racial equity and equality, but utilizing slave labor in order to achieve those goals. So am I missing that language, or has it just been forgotten and not included quite yet?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Aikum. Thank you for the question, Representative Franzen. And I'd direct you to the Buy Clean and Buy Fair provisions that Representative Lislegarde championed in this bill. And if you turn your attention to page 121, there are requirements for vendors for specific products, including solar panels and battery storage, as well as steel to provide information on the employee working conditions, names and locations of product manufacturers, environmental products, declarations for those products. So I think Representative Lisselgard has done really good work here in making sure that the products that we're purchasing as a state are living up to our best values.
Thank you, Representative Long. Representative Franson, did you have a follow-up?
I think that language is a nothing burger, but I assume that we'll continue these conversations as the bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen, did you have another question?
I'm having problems with my computer.
No worries.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just I got a question from a representative of the utility industry. He'd like me to ask Chair Long, how many millions in new utility customer assessments are authorized in this bill? And then where in the bill does it say the benefits will outweigh the cost? Over what period of time will it take for customers to see a net benefit? I could ask those separately if you want, but the first question is, how many millions in new utility customer assessments are authorized in this bill?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Akam. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, channeling a known utility speaker. So the answer to the first one, I think, was given to Representative Swierczynski by our fiscal staff. The answer to the second part in terms of benefits outweighing costs, well, I'm very glad that you asked that question. So I think that the benefits are many, and I spoke to some of them in my opening remarks. Those include affordability, and we talked a little bit about the savings that come from clean energy. They also include economic growth and job creation. We know that in the state of Minnesota, we don't have fossil fuels that we produce here, but we do have the opportunity to produce wind and solar. And I think that's why we've seen such strong labor support for this bill, is the opportunity to create new jobs and industries. And we've tried to make sure in this bill that those are good paying jobs. And then I think we also know the health benefits from reducing local pollution. And I spoke to the premature deaths that we see in the metro. And those numbers, I think, could be applied across the state. We know that there are impacts, real human impacts to pollution, and that those have economic value that you can place on them in terms of human lives, and trying to help reduce that pollution and move to pollution-free energy, I think, is a benefit as well. So I could also talk about the benefits from reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but I'm not sure if that would be persuasive to you. So I'll maybe stick with those first three topics.
Representative Grunhagen, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Madam Chair. The only thing I'd say is that one of the things that concerns me about government is that if we're wrong, let's say this bill, regardless of all the good intentions, actually drives up rates and does little for the environment, what's the consequence to us here in the legislature for passing this bill? I mean, that's my biggest problem with government, is they pass what well-meaning bills, but yet if things don't turn out or go worse than what they said, like Obamacare, everything turns out to be a lie and the opposite of what they say, you know, nobody pays a consequence. That's the problem. In private sector, if I operate my business and I wind up losing money, guess what happens eventually? I go out of business. With government, they pass laws and there's just no consequence. They just keep raising taxes and more and more and more laws. So is there anything in the bill that the legislature would actually suffer a consequence if what all the good intentions of this turn out to be the opposite of what it actually is supposed to produce?
And before I hand it over to Representative Long, I'll just say that's why it's so important that we base our decision and policy making on science and data. And so I'll turn that over to Representative Long, and he can respond.
Thank you, Chair Akam. Thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. I certainly agree with Chair Akam, and I would just point back to the last couple of decades of energy policy. And what we've seen is that when we've tried to guess about the price or the availability or the future of clean energy, we've always guessed wrong, but it's been that we've guessed too high. We thought that it was going to be too expensive or too hard to do, and it's proven otherwise. We've proven that costs have come down dramatically faster than anybody would have projected years ago, when in 2007 we set a renewable energy standard for the state. We thought that it was going to be very difficult to achieve. We thought it was going to, you know, we put a 25% standard on by 2025, and we met that 7 years early because it became so affordable and so easy to do. And I think you just need to look at the leadership of the utilities in the state and the direction that they're pointing to move us towards 100% clean energy, and the leadership that we're seeing from Xcel, from Minnesota Power, from Great River Energy, to show that this is the future direction of our state and of our country. And I don't think we want to be left behind. I don't think we want to be the last state to move on these new jobs and new opportunities. In fact, I think we want to be at the front of the line because we know that that's going to create good jobs, good industry in Minnesota. And that's something I think we should all want for our state.
Representative Grunhagen, did you have any follow-up?
Yeah, just a quick one. Over the last two decades, according to the information I have, Minnesota residential electric rates have risen 2.5 times faster than the national average. So I'll just make a prediction of this bill. You know, Chair Long made a prediction. I predict it's going to be the Obamacare of energy. Okay, so you're going to see skyrocketing rates, not much done on pollution, and endangerment of our grid, electrical grid, in terms of sustainability. That's my prediction. We'll see which one works out. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Grunhagen. Any final comments, Representative Long?
Yes, Chair Ikemba, just to respond to the last point from Representative Grunhagen. There's a tendency to conflate rates and bills, and they're not the same thing. Bills are what matters to folks because that's what they actually pay. And if you look at actual electricity bills, Minnesota's are the third lowest in the Midwest. They're well below the national average. And our advantage over our neighbors has actually increased since the passage of the renewable energy standard. Energy efficiency, for one, decreases sales, but it's good for the consumers' costs. So we just need to really focus on what matters for folks. And by that measure, Minnesota is doing a good job. And I do believe that moving towards clean energy, as we've seen with the decisions that utilities are making on behalf of their customers, is only going to save money for those customers.
Thank you, Representative Long. And with that, not seeing any further questions, we will meet again tomorrow. So on Wednesday, April 7th at 10:30. And just a reminder that amendments are due by 3 p.m. also on April 7th. So with that, we stand adjourned.